Good morning, good afternoon, and good night to everyone listening, and welcome into the Makeshift Managers Podcast. It is time for the NFC South. We are in week five of this series, and who other to bring on from Border Fuel Sports than, Devin. Devin's here.
Yeah, back like he never here. Left. Still here.
Yeah, great. Wonderful. But from BorderFuelSports.com, our Tampa Bay writer, resident Florida man. Can I say that? Is that okay to say in these days?
That is perfectly applicable. Proud to be a Florida resident.
Ken Filler is here with us today. Ken, how are you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you guys for inviting me to the podcast. Looking forward to it. And we're looking for another big season here for the Buccaneers. I cover all of Tampa sports for Border Fuel Sports. Not only do I write about the Buccaneers, I'm also writing about the Tampa Bay Rays, the Tampa Bay Lightning, done some Florida Gators stuff. So going to be a great football season. Hockey starts up again in 2 months. So things are good in Tampa Bay.
You got two champions and one almost champion. It's having a good time down there.
Absolutely, and everybody's sleeping on the Rays. I'm telling you, they are going to surprise some folks. I'm writing my next article on why Kevin Cash should be the manager of the year, and there's no sense in even voting. The pitching staff that he has had to work with all season is just incredible. This is a football podcast.
No, you're good. Kevin Cash is like a manager of the decade, it feels like sometimes. That man does some crazy shit down there. What the fuck, Tampa Bay's head coach? Why can't I remember his name?
Bruce Arians.
Air it out, Arians. Air it out, Arians.
Champion. Put some respect on his name.
I'm sorry. Isn't he like fucking like 90 years old or something?
Hey, he 68. You can't even tell. He doesn't look a day over 55. Bruce Arians. You look great, man. Don't listen to Austin.
Hey, man, if Bruce Arians is listening to me, I'm down for it.
If Bruce Arians ever hears my voice, shout out, Bruce. You did a great job last year, and by God, your front office class act this offseason. So we just want to hop into the division?
Unfortunately. I mean the poll was like 80%. 85% Tampa Bay to win the division, which was not shocking at all because we're about to go through teams who just really didn't get better than their record last year. So at 4-12, the bottom of the division, you have the Atlanta Falcons. Matt Ryan, he's done it his whole career. He's put up numbers. He's a great quarterback, but the man just has to outscore his opponent over and over. Look at these last five losses, 44-27. Okay, 17-14 to KC. That doesn't count. They lost to Tampa Bay 31-27. They lost to the Chargers. They lost to New Orleans. Matt Ryan. A lot of people get on Matt Ryan about the whole Super Bowl fiasco like a few years ago, but you know, I'm not going to get into it. They drafted Kyle Pitts, but they lost Julio Jones. They have Calvin Ridley to, I feel, replace Julio Jones. I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I feel like Calvin Ridley is close to the same level as Julio Jones when it comes to being fed out in Atlanta. He's going to stay healthy, and he's going to get a lot of targets. And then I just look at this defense, and I have no idea who any of these people are.
So Atlanta is really interesting because I firmly believe the head coach spot in the NFL is one of – obviously the teams and the talent on the teams player-wise plays a big role on any given Sunday. But God, Dan Quinn was awful last year. As much as I shit on Bill O'Brien for the last 8 months before he was fired, Dan Quinn, man, you're so lucky Bill O'Brien exists. Because if Bill O'Brien wasn't doing what he was doing down in Houston, I would have been right at his neck. Because on paper, this roster is kind of not really super inspiring. On defense, they've got a couple names that I know of personally. Like, I know who Deion Jones is, but outside of that, like Dante Fowler Jr., I've heard of him. Grady Jarrett, yes. But there's not a lot of like household name types on the defensive end. Offensively, they should be good. Don't trust the Falcons running back. in general, if you play fantasy, you should fade any Falcons running back. You'll learn the hard way. But in terms of an aerial attack, I think the Falcons are as equipped this year as they were last year. And I agree with you, Austin, on the whole Calvin Ridley front. I wouldn't say Ridley is at the level that Julio was at his peak in Atlanta, but just based upon their levels current day, yeah, I think Calvin Ridley will be able to fill the role of Julio Jones in this offense pretty damn well. And as we've seen in the past, Russell Gage is a competent NFL receiver. While he was functioning in the wide receiver three role, now he's bumped up to that two spot. I think the biggest thing is we're gonna have to see how Ridley deals with more double teams, because yeah, he's a stud receiver, but he was playing across the field from Julio Jones, who is arguably a top 10 receiver of all. It's undeniable at this point. He's a top 10 receiver all time, just in terms of looking at him against his contemporaries. But Kyle Pitts projects to be the best tight end prospect since God knows when. So Matt Ryan's going to have the tools. Arthur Smith is the new coach down there. I like what he did with Tennessee, and I think the aerial weapons arguably are better than what he had in Tennessee. So I'm not saying they're going to be the worst team in the division this year. I think they actually might improve, because I think Dan Quinn himself was worth 4 to 5 losses, in my opinion. The way he managed games was just absolutely terrible. And the injuries last year were also paramount in the overall outlook for the Falcons.
Well, the other thing, too, as you think about the Falcons, I mean, the defense is horrible. They don't have a running game. Matt Ryan's going to put the ball up a ton. And when you put the ball up a lot, you're going to turn the ball over a lot, too. So the Falcons are going to have to outscore almost everybody in every game, and I don't see that happening. That is why I can't see the Falcons winning at best 6 games. I know they have 4 last year, but 5 is a good number for them, maybe 6. But I just don't see the offense being able to outscore opponents like you need to, especially with Matt Ryan, a quarterback, a decent quarterback. But he can't do it all. And he's got really 2 weapons. He's got Ridley and Pitts, and that's it. So another disappointing season, I think, coming up in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think a big point for this season for the Falcons is, when do we start talking about the fact that the Falcons could trade Matt Ryan? Or when does Matt Ryan want to get out, personally? Because Matt Ryan's been an above-average quarterback his entire career, in my opinion. He's got an MVP under his belt, and he's getting older. I don't see him wanting to toil away in mediocrity for the rest of his days.
Well, where does he go?
Absolutely.
That's fair. What? Why couldn't he go to Indianapolis? Like, if I were Matt Ryan right now, obviously heading into the offseason, if I were Matt Ryan after Dan Quinn got fired, not knowing what was going to happen, I wouldn't have blamed him if he seeked a trade going into last offseason. Now, obviously, he's not just going to pack up and leave and be like, trade me now. But, gosh, it's going to be interesting. Cause I don't know if Carson Wentz pans out in Indianapolis, but that's a topic for next week's show. But in the NFL, there's always one team that needs a quarterback, regardless of the landscape of the league. So I think Matt will find a home if he wants to relocate.
But it's like, he would have to like almost go to a contender, but at what point, what contending team is going to need a quarterback besides Indy right now? Because Carson, like, we'll talk about it next week, but Carson Wentz will probably be out the first 5 to 8 weeks of the season. So if you're not going to trade for Matt Ryan before that, the trade deadline's what, halfway through the season, usually week 9.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't even know what you you wouldn't even know what you have in Carson Wentz by the time you're ready to trade for Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
So it's a weird spot for old Matty Ice.
I think a dark horse candidate, I'm not saying it would happen, but as hot as the Broncos were on Aaron Rodgers going into the draft this year, if Denver's even remotely close to a wild card spot with Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater, I'd make the move for Matt Ryan. With the weapons in Denver and the rushing attack they have in the defense and what it should be this year, I think Matt Ryan could be a guy that could take that team to a different level if all the cards were to play out the way they need to.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the funny thing is like nobody's really talked about it that much.
Yeah,
like we talked about Aaron Rodgers, and we've talked about these guys getting moved, and these guys. Nick Foles is getting more talk about being traded than Matt Ryan. Like, it's not even like on the board right now, it seems like. And I think,
yeah,
I think Atlanta thinks they can compete. I know they probably can't, but you have to. I don't know, if you're in the Falcons organization, you still can't. You still have to believe you got to compete. You have the offense to do it, but you just got to hope, you know, the defense pulls a miracle and plays well. I mean, I know all the cards are against them, but I feel like you just can't give up on Matt Ryan before the season starts.
Yeah, I just think Atlanta's in the worst place an NFL franchise can be at. They maxed out their potential in that Super Bowl against Brady, which they squandered away. We haven't forgotten. And they are now in NFL purgatory. They have the they have the decaying bones of the old regime in Matt Ryan, and they're trying to retool, but this roster I don't think is retoolable. Like, yes, Kyle Pitts is a great building block for your future, but the timelines are never going to match up. So they're caught in this just vice that is, we want to compete, but we just don't have the talent to compete. And they're not going to be able to compile it with players like Matt Ryan at the helm. It's just, regardless of how you piece it together, it probably isn't going to work in the landscape of today's NFL.
Yeah, and if you don't, I don't know, like, how much longer till Calvin Ridley is going to bounce out? Like, this is, what, his third year? Third or fourth year? So, by the time they figure out what they would want to do, it might be time to pay Calvin Ridley or let him go.
I just don't get how you trade Julio in the offseason and don't even entertain moving Matt Ryan, personally. Like, I get you want Calvin Ridley to stay, but they sold arguably one of the best players in their franchise's history. Like, yes, Deion Sanders was an Atlanta Falcon, but it's just crazy to me. Like, they moved Julio freaking Jones, and there was no question about whether or not they could move on from Matt Ryan. Because if they could have traded Matt Ryan and tried to, because obviously Pitts was a good pick, but this quarterback class could be insane moving forward. Like, obviously you don't take Fields at four, but trade back possibly. I don't know. They just got to hope that there's a good to great quarterback prospect in the next 2 to 3 drafts, because if they can't land their guy, they're going to be in a really bad spot.
All I can think about is Ken just like sitting back in his chair being like, yeah, we brought back all 22 starters. just hanging out, like, yeah. Think about like how bad of a spot all your division opponents are in. And, you know, finally, after dealing with Jameis Winston for all that long, you're like, nah, we're good. We're good.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're talking about the Falcons trying to turn the corner. You know, you mentioned the defense. They're not going to improve at all. They were 29th last year in total defense, and I don't see them moving the dial much on that. And we talked about Matt Ryan having to carry the load offensively for the Falcons. The Falcons were just 18th in total offense last year. Now, they were 5th in passing, but they were almost dead last in rushing, 27th in the league. So, again, it's going to fall on the shoulders of Matt Ryan, whatever this Falcon club does. And I don't see any more than 5 wins. I don't care how you slice it, how you dice it. It's not going to happen for the Falcons this year.
Yeah, the best way I can put this is, whenever your kicker is the 4th best player on your roster, you're probably going to be the 4th best team in your division. Shout out Younghoe Koo. You are a stud, but not much to be optimistic about in Atlanta this year.
Yeah, and like, a lot of people are high on Mike Davis when it's like, yeah, he filled in for Christian McCaffrey pretty well, you know, as much as you can, filling in for like one of the best running backs, if not the best running back in the game right now, in terms of just production. But Mike Davis has never been like a 3-down back 16 games a year, and he doesn't have this great line to run through. Like, Todd Gurley had an okay time, and then he fell at the goal line and cost them a game, but, you know, we won't talk about that.
The thing with Gurley was, like, he had unreal touchdown production. Like, everybody talks about in fantasy, like, regression. and there's either positive regression or negative regression. And this offensive line and running attack, they're scheming towards negative regression for this year. To sit here and think that Todd Gurley had a great year would be kind of just malpractice. He had like less than 700 yards and fell into the end zone, luckily, but it is what it is. There's not going to be enough protection up front for the holes to be there for the running back. And we've seen time in and time out, a bad line plus a decent running back or even a great running back doesn't always lead to production.
Yeah, and just to help your point, 15 games, 195 touches, 678 yards, 9 touchdowns.
Exactly. Only reason Gurley was usable in fantasy was the touchdown production. Because if he wasn't scoring, you were getting an RB4.
And even then, 9 is his second lowest career season. He's had 10, yeah. 13, 17, 12. Like, I mean, granted, that's just a different Todd Gurley in those days. But, I think this team finishes last again. I think Carolina can win a few more games than them because I think
Carolina's more talented. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Atlanta's defense is just going to give too much up. So let's transition into the Carolina Panthers, the team who traded for Sam Darnold for basically nothing. They're going to get their running back in Christian McCaffrey. You got Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore. They did lose Curtis Samuel to free agency. Dan Arnold's their tight end. Okay. That's something. Oh, yeah, because Greg Olsen's been gone for like 6 years now, it feels like.
Yeah.
Who did they draft? I thought they drafted...
Oh, J.C. Horn.
The Panthers?
They got J.C. Horn with their first rounder. I liked the pick a lot, to be honest. Because then they got Terrence Marshall in like the second or third round. At their 3 spot for receiver. Yeah, J.C. Horn was the first cornerback off the board.
Oh, the Lions got Sewell. Okay, different blue team.
Yeah, yeah.
I was confused.
We get our shades confused sometimes.
Yeah.
Both big cats.
Yeah, it just happens. But anyways, it's going to be put up or shut up for Sam Darnold. He's going to have a better team around him than he did at the Jets. I'm not saying this Carolina Panthers team is insanely good, but he is going to, have a running back he can trust. He's reunited with Robbie Anderson, who he's a good pass catcher. He's a good route runner. He's quick. He's not, he's lengthy. He's not going to bowl anybody over, but I think he's a good wide receiver. I like DJ Moore. Couldn't tell you much about Terrence Marshall Jr. or even Dan Arnold for that matter. I feel like Dan Arnold's been in the league for like 87 years. Fifth season, never mind, not even close. It just sounds like an old guy name, doesn't it?
Yeah, his name sounds like he was the MVP of Super Bowl III.
So you got J.C. Horn, you got second year Jeremy Chinn. Jeremy Chinn had a wonderful year last year, I think. I feel like this team, they played close games last year with, the Chiefs played down to them a little bit. They still played close games last year in terms of, just trying to squeak it out without CMC for, CMC played what, 3 games, I would say. Devin's like, I drafted him, I know.
He averaged 30 per game. It was fun while it lasted.
I think if CMC can stay healthy, this team could get close to 7 to 8 wins. I don't think they'll get over that 500 mark. I think the best they could finish is 8-9. The worst they could finish is probably 6-11. I still think they're good enough to get out 6 games over, 2 or 3 good teams and win the games that they're supposed to. They could easily 2-0 the Falcons and 1-1 with the Saints. We kind of don't know what the Saints are yet. And if Sam Darnold doesn't work out, you got PJ Walker, just hanging out on the sideline. He got some reps last year.
Yeah, I like the Panthers probably as an 8-win team this year. I mean, if you're Sam Darnold, you got to be giddy that Matt Rhule is going to be your coach and not Adam Gase. I mean, I think Matt Rhule's probably forgot more football than, Adam Gase, ever knew. And like you said, the Panthers were competitive. I think they just wore down a lot in the second half. Obviously, the injury to the running back McCaffrey hurt them. He only ran for 225 yards last year, and obviously they're expecting, you know, a full season from him, and that'll really help Darnold immensely. But, you know, take the coaching out of it. We know Matt Rhule's a better coach than Adam Gase. The talent level on the Carolina team is head and shoulders above what he had to work with in New York. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do with a much more talented roster than, you know, what he had to work with the Jets. But I think the Panthers are probably an 8-win team at best. I think they probably go.
I have to agree. I like the Panthers a lot more than the Falcons. If Darnold can figure it out, I think the outlook for the future of Carolina is better than it's been in the last 3 years.
Okay, wait. Let me stop you there because I really want to have this question answered. What does Sam Darnold have to do in your eyes to quote unquote figure it out? What does your stat line look like, or what did he struggle with in New York that he needs to fix in Carolina? I'm just like super curious because we've said this a lot. Like, we've been saying it for years about Sam Darnold, and the dude's still only 24 years old.
For me, the whole Sam Darnold equation is going to come down to winning games. Like, I there's not a certain number of yards I need him to throw for. He has to have a better touchdown to interception ratio. If he's throwing 20 touchdowns and 20 picks, they're not going to be a good team. It's just, you turn the ball over in the NFL, you can't be a winning team. We've seen that with Daniel Jones and his butterfingers over the last 2 years. So I'm going to need to see Darnold. Because if wins are piling up, that's great. But hopefully 3,500 yards passing and like a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio at the worst is what I'd want out of Darnold. Because if he's constantly turning the ball over, I don't see them letting him run this team into the ground before they kick the tires on PJ Walker.
Okay. I like it. Carry on with your analysis. It's just Sam Darnold is like the X factor of this team, I feel like. And I'm not saying that like Christian McCaffrey isn't. Like, the offense runs through Christian McCaffrey. We all know that. But, you know, they took a chance on Teddy Bridgewater last year, and now they're taking a chance on Sam Darnold. And really, now's his chance. If we felt like he didn't have a chance with Adam Gase, you know, Ken talked about Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule's he coached a tough season through COVID and injuries, and he still came out, you know, what was it, 5-11 without the best running back. And you still played close games. You know, missed beating the Chiefs by a field goal.
Yeah. So the whole Panthers, because I'm looking at Darnold's career stats right now. For his career, his completion percentage is 59.8%. His touchdown to interceptions 45-39. He's thrown for 8,000 yards in his career. He just has to, if he can be in like the 20, like mid 20s to low 30s in touchdowns and below 15 picks, I will count that as a success. Because my biggest thing with Darnold is decision making. Because in obviously with Adam Gase at coach and with the talent disparity in New York, it's hard to play quarterback. The last successful Jets quarterback we saw was Mark Sanchez, and that feels like 50 years ago at this point. But Darnold has to prove that he can make good decisions with the ball and not force passes and just be a smart player under center. Because in his shoes, I don't think he's going to have to do many extraordinary things for this team to be better than they were last year. On paper, this is one of, like, obviously the Bucs have a better offense, but I like their skill guys more than the Saints to a large degree. Even their backup running back in Chuba Hubbard should have a good year. Their receiving core of Anderson, DJ Moore, and Terrence Marshall Jr. is solid. DJ Moore and Terrence Marshall Jr. are very, very young, and Robbie Anderson's still not even 30 years old. So the pass catchers are there, and if they can keep that core, I don't see much of a fall off with Marshall supplanting Curtis Samuel. Tight end's weird there. I'm not a huge fan of Dan Arnold. Ian Thomas is also on the depth chart. It's just going to be guys to catch a red zone target or be a stopgap for Darnold, I feel, just like a security blanket. Where I like this team a lot is the defense. Brian Burns is a pretty damn good defensive end. I like Derek Brown. He was a high pick for them a couple years back, if I'm correct. Shaq Thompson, I've always been a fan of him. Denzel Perryman should be good for them in terms of just a veteran linebacker on the defense. And then, yeah, you mentioned Jeremy Chinn. He was in discussions for Defensive Rookie of the Year for a while last season. He makes a lot of big plays. And if J.C. Horn produces in the way that analysts and the Panthers are thinking he will, he could be the best corner out of this draft class. And that is saying a lot, because you had guys like Surtain and Farley all in that discussion. But J.C. Horn is an explosive athlete. And also, we're getting another year older for Joey Sly for more reps, more kicks. Because my biggest thing with Joey Sly is his lack of consistency. Because if Joey Sly can bump his field goal percentage from 80.6 to like 85, possibly 90 within the next year or two, some of these closer games that they're playing, and they might actually come out on top. They might be able to squeak some of these wins out because their special teams can put points on the board. Because if you have a kicker that can hit 100% of his kicks from anywhere, you're taking that over. There's this whole like masterful question. I read about it somewhere on like Reddit, and it was like, would you rather take a kicker that will make 100% of his kicks for his career in the first round, or a highly rated quarterback? And it's like, the numbers say if you can have a guy that'll hit every kick he's ever going to kick, you take the kicker, because you're going to get 3 points every drive regardless. So if Sly can up the percentages, I like the bones of the team. I think they're a couple years away from being competitive, especially with a guy named Tom in the division. But I don't know. If I were a Panthers fan, I have an optimistic outlook. It doesn't matter if they make the playoffs. If they can just get to that 8-win threshold, I think it's a win. And if Sam Darnold shows improvements, it's even better.
Okay. It's pretty straightforward about the Panthers. They're in a much better spot than the Falcons are, and honestly, I think than the Saints are. They kind of know where they're headed. I think they have the guy that'll lead the way in terms of head coach. They are going to lock down their running back forever. They just can never let him leave. And if Sam Darnold or PJ Walker works out, great. That will be great for them. They've drafted two really good defensive guys. Their defense has kind of been mediocre, but if Jeremy Chinn and J.C. Horn are making plays, I think that really works out for them really well. So usually we would move on to the second place team, which was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But since, you know, they won this Lombardi Trophy thing, whatever the hell that is, we're gonna go with the Saints. And then we'll get to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because they finished second in the division, but they finished at the top of the league, plain and simple. So in terms of the New Orleans Saints, you got Drew Brees, who is gone, retired. I think after getting your ribs cracked, I think that would probably send me home too. So it's between Jimbo 30-30 Vision Winston and Taysom Hill. If Jameis Winston isn't QB1 week one, I will riot. Alvin Kamara will get another 5-touchdown game if he feels like it. Mike, I have no idea what you're going to get out of Michael Thomas. He's going to be out the first few weeks of the season anyways. They have Traquan Smith, Deontay Harris, Adam Trautman. This offense, I mean, even if Drew Brees was still leading this offense, it would still kind of look a little suspect, but Drew Brees could drop in dimes to me running down the sidelines, for crying out loud, and all I have to do is just catch it. They still got Cameron Jordan. They still have Marshawn Lattimore, who's playing at, you know, an insane pace. They got Kaywon Alexander, which really, I don't know how well that worked out for them. Malcolm Jenkins, Marcus Williams. I can always count on Will Lutz to hit kicks and then destroy me on Monday Night Football and fantasy. Bastard. like, we saw a little bit that the offense was able to work around the way Taysom Hill plays the game, but the second teams force Taysom Hill to throw the ball, it's going to go to shit for them. And you can't, he's not going to be like what Cam Newton was in his prime and have like insane rushing skills and be able to throw the ball as well as Cam did and this and that. I just don't know what Sean Payton is so obsessed with, but I feel like Jameis Winston has to be QB1 week one. I feel like this guy deserves the chance. And, you know, Ken can talk about Jameis because he's, you know, watched him for six years, however long he was Tampa Bay's quarterback. And the guy's got a cannon of an arm, but he just has the bad decision making. Who knows if it was the vision or not? Who knows if the if that new LASIK surgery is going to fix what the problems were? I mean, I can't imagine a 30 for 30 season. Yeah, just Ken, I'll let you talk about Jameis Winston and what it was like.
Yeah, well, a couple things about Jameis on the positive side. Nobody on the team is going to work harder than Jameis Winston. I mean, he put in the prep time. Preparation was never an issue for Jameis. He was one of the hardest workers on the team. He had the respect of his teammates because he worked hard and kind of set that example. But as you alluded to, his decision-making at crunch time was absolutely horrendous. Just when you think that you had the game won, here comes Jameis, and all he has to do is grind out a minute and a half or 2 minutes on the clock, and he'd do something stupid. There'd be a fumble. There'd be an interception. And every single time that happened, I swear to you, in his media sessions, he would get up and then ask him the questions and say, well, I just have to play better. Well, you know, that's on me. I just got to do a better job. Well, no shit. Why can't you do a better job? This has happened now 4 weeks in a row, dude. Figure it out. And, you know, that was mostly under Dirk Cutter. Bruce Arians came in and, you know, Arians, if you remember, gave him a lot of support that first year when Winston really wasn't playing very well. The turnovers were mounting, and Arians tried to be positive and pump him up in the media. And the last game of the season or two games of the season, Arians kind of pulled that support and said, yeah, he's got to play better. Just terrible performance today by Jameis. So if he can get his decision-making figured out, the Saints will be competitive. Now, they're not going to win the division, but like you said, Winston's got to be the quarterback from day one. Taysom Hill, to me, is a gadget player. Okay, I mean, he runs the ball, throws a little, plays on special teams, can run the ball as a wide receiver. That's not what you want your quarterback to do. That's not the type of quarterback that I want on my team, somebody that's going to line up every play at a different position. So Jameis, you know, has to improve the turnovers. He's got to cut way down on those. And I'm going to tell you, Saints fans are going to be really disappointed because I don't think he's the answer. And I don't think that LASIK surgery is going to make a damn bit of difference. I think Winston's just a turnover machine, and he just gets jittery when the pressure's on and turns the ball over, be it a fumble or an interception. So 9 wins for the Saints. That's the best I see them doing. And, you know, Michael Thomas, as you said, you don't know what you're getting with Michael Thomas. Kamara's going to be Kamara. But, you know, one guy can't do it all on offense. So, yeah, Saints fans are going to miss Breeze from game one because Winston is not. And you got a Hall of Fame coach in Sean Payton. So if anybody can bring out the best in Jameis, it's going to be Sean Payton. But I don't even think that Sean Payton can work that kind of match.
Yeah, the Saints are super interesting this year. I agree. I think Taysom Hill is like the gimmick of the Saints. Like he is what he is. He's not an NFL quarterback. Like even if he's on the depth chart as a quarterback, he is a platoon gadget type player. Like if I were to quantify it into like a comparison, Taysom Hill is the Crystal Pepsi of quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, he has a really weird skill set, and it's not going to stick around for a long time, but people like to see it for some reason. But I also agree Jameis doesn't make the best of decisions, and I think that's going to prove to be the biggest problem for the Saints this year, unless for some reason Sean Payton just got into Jameis's head. Because you're right, if there's any coach that's going to be able to try and rein in the Jameis Winston turnover party, it probably is Sean Payton. But this is going to be probably the weirdest Saints team we've seen in a long time. Because whenever Breeze went down a couple years back and they tossed in Bridgewater to hold place, they weren't losing too much. Because Teddy Bridgewater isn't some gunslinger. He's not going to try and win you the game on two balls. He's going to game manage and make appropriate throws at appropriate times. Jameis Winston is a gunslinger. And so I don't know how Sean's going to utilize the power of Jameis's arm along with Jameis's just decision making in late game situations. But I do think this is like going to be the end of the road for a bulk of the Saints core. This team is hard capped out to a certain degree with this roster already. And a lot of their guys have already gotten their extensions. But for how long are we going to see the Saints team consistently run back this group and hopefully make the playoffs, but lose in stupendous fashion? Because as I was saying before, the Falcons are in kind of a shitty situation with the bones of an old regime and some exciting talent of new prospects. How long do the Saints do this thing where they don't have their guy at quarterback and they're just toiling away with these all pro-level talents at skill positions and defenders? Because if Kamara and the Saints aren't winning games, I don't see any player willing to stay with the team if they're not going to have a chance to win. It just doesn't make much sense to me. Obviously, on defense, they're returning names, household-type guys, Cameron Jordan, DeMario Davis, Marshawn Lattimore. Quan Alexander, I think, could be a plus for their defense. He was hurt the last 2 years, for a majority of the 2 years. But whenever he was playing in Tampa, he was a Pro Bowl-level linebacker, from what I remember. So if he can recover even 85% of what he was in Tampa, I like him in their defense. But then again, with Michael Thomas being sidelined for probably the first 3 to 5 weeks of the season, Kamara's going to have to take a huge role in the offense. And out of any running back in the league, I think he's capable of doing it. He has a very unique skill set in terms of balance, speed, and agility that not many backs can sport. And he's a tough dude. He can take a hit. But Kamara carrying the rock for 25 times and getting 10 receptions probably isn't the formula to win games in today's NFL, because their defense is good, but it's not great. They're not going to be holding teams to like below 20 points each game in the way that I see it. And their kicker's hurt currently with Will Lutz, so they just signed Brett Maher to fill in until Lutz is good to go. I just think their key pieces on defense are getting older. I don't know how healthy that unit's going to stay this year. I think their offensive line could be a big focus for the team this year, because they have players like Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead, Andres Pete. And those three guys have been on this line for a while now. And if they can stay healthy and that line can create holes for Kamara, which would help set up the play action for Jameis, I think that's good. It's better than not having a line at all. But without Thomas in the lineup at receiver, I just don't see anyone on their depth chart that's making me feel confident in any of the pass catchers. Yes, Traquan Smith is an explosive deep threat. Deontay Harris can catch a pass. But whenever Chris Hogan is your backup wide receiver too, I don't know what to expect out of a group of pass catchers that really is generally unproven outside of Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I think Kevin was saying it best with Jameis. It's like, oh, I just need to play better. It's like, well, yeah, we're aware. But he's 27 years old. He's got 7 years of experience. I think he deserves this chance to try and lead this team. Whether he's the answer or not, all signs point to no, that he's not. You're stepping in like Hall of Famer shoes. The Saints have been successful since Drew Brees showed up for the most part. They got their Super Bowl. They've been, you know, say what you want about them choking in the playoffs or not, they still make it there. And that's, I don't know about you guys or anyone listening, but I'd much rather be in the playoffs and get knocked out. I mean, I'm a Cowboys fan, so I pretty much know that already. But anyways, I'd still rather see my team be successful in one way than just be tanking and have there be no hope. You know, I'd always wonder, like to wonder how we can get over, you know, the hump of winning a playoff game rather than the hump of winning 8 games in the regular season. Yeah, and in terms of like his eye surgery, yeah, probably is not going to make a whole lot of difference. The guy's a gunslinger. I thought Bruce Arians was a solid coach for him in terms of the type of offense he brought, a gunslinger and an air raid offense. Of course, it didn't really work out that great. But he's not going to have the weapons that he did in Tampa Bay that he has now. I don't know how often he's going to sling the rock to Alvin Kamara. You know, Breeze would always have good dump downs to Kamara. I feel like that's a good recipe for Jameis and not be throwing down the field all the time. They are in cap hell. They are almost, it almost feels like they're in a worse position than the Atlanta Falcons are. Like, at least the Atlanta Falcons have, like, you know, got a solid tight end where they want to be, and they have a number one wide receiver, and, you know, Matt Ryan could still quarterback for another few years if they need to draft another one. If Jameis doesn't work out, we're pretty sure Taysom isn't going to work out. Where would the Saints go from there? They can't go out and buy anybody. Like, what do they do?
The thing with the Saints for me in their situation is, at the end of the day, the NFL is a business, and they're owned by an ownership group, which I forget who owns the Saints, but owners don't like to pay for teams that aren't winning at the highest level. Like, we see it in baseball a lot. There are teams that just refuse to spend money, so like, if we're not going to win the World Series, why are we even paying the money? And the Saints have one of the highest payrolls in the league, and if it's just going to continue to 9-win seasons, 10-win seasons without a Super Bowl ring, at a certain point, the way I look at sports franchises, I look at them like Phoenixes. At their peak, they are super powerful and hopefully are winning Super Bowls, but in every team's life cycle, there's a moment where you burn it all down because you have to. And with a team like the Saints, I just don't see ownership wanting to pay all this money for a team that's not getting it done at the end of the day. So stuff is going to have to change.
Yeah, I don't know. It, like we were talking about earlier, is that outside of Tampa Bay, none of these three teams are in the most outstanding spot. If I were to rank what kind of spots they're in, I would much rather be in Carolina's spot than the other two teams. And then Atlanta and New Orleans both look like they're on the road to tanking, it feels like. It just feels like there's nothing they can do to fix their problems rather than just tear it all down and build it back up, where you have two franchises who have been succeeding for a while now. And, you know, Tampa Bay's been kind of hanging out in the woodworks trying to figure it out. And they were just like, ah, fuck it, sign Brady. And it worked, you know, like they, like I hit me with it.
The problem with the Saints was, they were never really planning for a future without Drew Brees. And because honestly, the Bucks for a while, they were just toiling away with Jameis. And I don't think anybody fully expected the Bucks to sign Tom Brady. And I don't think the Saints ever thought that Brady was going to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. And that's what has cost them. And that's why I think they're in a very terrible situation at this point, because the Saints were comfortable. The South, obviously, with those years with Cam Newton as well, it was the Saints division for the most part. Yeah, Cam had some great seasons, but with Drew Brees under center, the Saints were in the hunt for the division title or like a strong wild card spot most years, barring injury. And I just think they got way too confident in themselves and just were banking on the incompetence of the franchises around them. And Tampa Bay basically bossed up. They said, okay, we're going to put our money where our mouth is. Because Tampa Bay built their roster the correct way. organically through the draft and through signings, they created this monster of a unit that we see now, and they bided their time until they had that last like puzzle piece to plug in with Tom Brady. Because yeah, there was question marks going into the year, but I'm looking at Tampa Bay's roster right now, and they've got second string dudes that could start, some third string guys that could start on NFL rosters today. And I don't know many rosters that have that flexibility going into the year.
Yeah. So speaking of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, this is our friend Ken's specialty. This is his team. This is his Super Bowl champions. Ken, take it away.
Well, as everyone knows, the Bucs have all 22 starters returning from last season's Super Bowl winning team. That is the first time that has ever happened in the salary cap era. The offense was good last year. They put up 30 points a game. I think they finished third in the league overall. And that was with Tom Brady not figuring out the offense till really late November, early December, when they went on that magical run and put 8 straight in the win column to win the Super Bowl. When camp opened in late July, Bruce Arians said that this offense was light years ahead of where they were last year. Tom Brady has now had 15 months in this offense to learn it and to tweak it. So the question is, can the Bucs offense be better than it was last year? Absolutely. And they've added a couple of playmakers that's going to make that offense a little bit better. Number one was running back Giovanni Bernard. They brought Bernard in for his pass-catching ability. He's probably not going to run the ball a whole lot with Fournette and Ronald Jones in the backfield, but those guys have trouble hanging on to the ball and making catches. And as we all know, Tom Brady likes to have that running back that he can dump that ball off to, James White, you know, in New England. Bernard is going to fill that role very nicely for the Buccaneers. He had 47 catches last year in Cincinnati, and that was more than Jones had, more than Fournette had. So look for Bernard to be a huge player in the passing game for Tom Brady, especially when it comes to out of the backfield catches. The other playmaker that's going to impact the offense is a rookie by the name of Jalen Darden. A lot of people don't know that name. He's a rookie from North Texas, just quicker than shit. And he is excellent in the return game, and he is excellent at getting downfield behind defenders. So the Bucs are going to be able to deploy him along with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, Scotty Miller, and possibly Tyler Johnson. So that is an outstanding receiving core. In fact, my latest piece for Border Fuel Sports was the Bucs receivers are still the number one receiving unit in the National Football League. There's nobody even close. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, they can walk into any NFL locker room and immediately be the number one receiver. On Antonio Brown, he's probably a Hall of Fame receiver now. His legal problems set him back a little bit. But the buzz from camp, from different people, is Antonio Brown is the best wide receiver on this Buccaneers team. And when you're talking Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, that's a huge thing to say. So the Bucs are loaded offensively. Jones and Fournette are back. Offensive line is back. The thing that concerns me, if there is a concern offensively, would be the lack of depth along the offensive line. Once you get past your 5 starters, the Bucs don't have a lot of players that have NFL experience. So you get an injury or two, somebody goes down, that could be problematic at some point. We'll have to wait and see how that works out. Defensively, you know, all starters are back. Todd Bowles has said that this year in camp, the players are just making plays. Last year, too many times during games, we saw the players kind of have to think and react about what they were doing or what they were supposed to be doing, as opposed to just knowing what to do and making a play. That's not the case this year. So you're going to see a better defense out of this Bucs team than what you saw last year. The Bucs defense last year was number one run defense. They were the only defense to allow opponents less than 1,000 yards running the ball all season. And I think they can even, improve on those numbers. Overall, defensively, the Buccaneers struggled the first half of the season. They really didn't put it all together defensively till early November. And once they did, that really, propelled them and helped them on that 8-game win streak that, they took all the way to the Super Bowl. But this Bucs team is loaded. The defensive backfield is going to be better. A lot of young talent back there, and they took their lumps last year early in the season. But as the season went along, they got better. Carlton Davis, Sean Murphy Bunning, Whitehead, Antoine Winfield Jr., and those are guys, a couple of those guys in the years to come are going to be Pro Bowl candidates. So they are loaded defensively in the backfield. The linebackers are very, very underrated. You have Devin White and Levante David. People talk about Devin White, but Levante David has been there for years and gets absolutely zero respect. The numbers that guy puts up are just incredible. And when you have Shaq Barrett on one side, Jason Pierre-Paul on the other side, that is a damn good linebacking core. So they're loaded at linebacker. On the defensive line, Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh are like two huge immovable rocks. It is really, really difficult to block those guys, especially when they're in there together. Another big thing for the Bucs last year was kicker Ryan Succop. The Bucs have not had a reliable kicker probably since 2011, 2012. And Succop last year was just outstanding. 52 of 57 in extra points, 28 of 31 in field goals. We were talking about the young kid, for Atlanta and the kicker for Carolina being consistent, making kicks when they mattered. Succop was able to do that, and he played a big part in the Buccaneers having their success down the stretch. So I look for the Bucs to win the division. I look for another deep playoff run, and I see no reason why this team can't repeat the Super Bowl champions with Tom Brady. First team to repeat since I believe Brady did it with the Pats in 03-04. So we're excited about the season. I'll be at the stadium Saturday to see Cincinnati, first preseason game. And we're just excited for another great season of football.
Yeah, this Bucs team is stout as all hell. This division is one true contender and three teams just praying to God they can figure something out. Yeah, I at this point going into the season, I think the Bucs have to be the favorite out of the NFC. It's just the way it is. They were the best team last year. That was proven in the Super Bowl and throughout the playoffs. And they did nothing but keep what kept them great last year. And it's not like a bulk of their impact guys are super old. Like, yeah, Ndamukong Suh's over 30. Jason Pierre-Paul's a little bit older. But they're still in great shape. There's not really a huge injury history you have to worry about with a lot of these guys. And I agree, the Bucs have the best receiver room in the league. The fact that Antonio Brown is a wide receiver 3 on this roster is insanity. Antonio Brown is the greatest wide receiver 3 in NFL history. He's arguably, in the grand scheme of things, if you just look at the talent on the field at his peak, AB could be against some of the best receivers that have ever played. Antonio Brown was transcendent at his peak. And then you've got the deep threat in Mike Evans. Chris Godwin as a receiver is one of the more underrated players, in my opinion. The running back room did nothing but improve. Fournette, everybody thought he was spare parts. The Bucs picked him up. He's now a Super Bowl champion. Ronald Jones Jr. just needs to hold on to the ball. If he solves the fumbling issues, he's a stud. He can break off for a 95-yard run any given Sunday. Giovanni Bernard, he is going to be the James White of this offense, as Ken alluded to. Tom Brady's 44 years old, but as everyone's realized over the last 5 years, the age of Tom Brady does not matter. Tom Brady will stop playing football whenever he knows he's ready to stop playing football. So I'm just done speculating on if Tom Brady's done or not. The tight end room is even impressive. You've got Gronkowski, OJ Howard, and Cameron Brate. All three of these guys can catch passes from an NFL quarterback proficiently at tight end. And if OJ Howard can stay healthy, he could be a monster in the red zone, because OJ Howard is talented. His talent is through the roof. I've been looking at him in fantasy for the last 3 years, praying for a breakout. I feel like he has to be due. Tristan Wirfs, coming out of his rookie year, he was an absolute monster. I expect him to improve. Ali Marpet is a great guard. The line should be amazing. You pray for health whenever it comes to your offensive line, but this unit proved last year that they're good enough, and with more time together, I only see it improving. And the defense, it speaks for itself. Whenever you've got a linebacker trio of Devin White, Lavonte David, and Shaq Barrett, that's three names that'll make any offense quiver in fear. People were on Aaron Rodgers for not going for it on that, what was it, like a third down in the NFC Championship game? And either he threw a pass, I think he threw a pass to Devontae Adams that was incomplete whenever he had a lane to try and score a touchdown. People neglect the fact that that was Devin White bearing down on Aaron Rodgers on that play. Devin White is insanely fast for a linebacker, and he's closing that gap 9 out of 10 times. I like the secondary. Carlton Davis had a good year last year. Antoine Winfield Jr., I love his energy. Whenever he, I think he waved or he did the peace sign at Tyreek Hill at the end of the Super Bowl, I thought that was hilarious. Sean Murphy Bunting, he was solid last year. Jordan Whitehead, good free safety. This team is the perfect storm, because in the previous episodes, I've made comments about in certain divisions, I could see the coaches kind of being that whole tiebreaker. And Bruce Arians at this point is the best coach in the NFC South. You can go ahead and at me on Twitter if you want, because Sean Payton's this and Sean Payton's that. Bruce Arians has been a brilliant offensive mind for years, and he was rewarded for his contributions to the game last year, and he might be able to stack some rings into this year. And Todd Bowles, I'm sure he probably had some offers to be a head coach somewhere, but I respect the decision to come back and run it back. Their offensive coordinator, I forget who it is. Isn't it Culpepper? No, it's not. I forget Leftwich. The name of the Byron Leftwich. Byron Leftwich. He's a former quarterback. Yeah. Offensive coordinator's back in Byron Leftwich. This coaching core is solid, and they proved last year that the schemes work. This division's going to be a runaway for the Bucs. I could see them winning 11 to 12 games. Their biggest problem last year was coming out slow, because I don't blame any team that came out slow last year with the COVID stuff going on and the lack of a full training camp and a rookie camp. A lot of their players came in just with not enough reps going into their first NFL season. And now you're giving a team that proved to be the best last year a full camp, a full rookie camp. And I just don't see how the team regresses. I only see them building upon the hot streak they hit at the end of the year and doing it throughout the year.
Yeah, they went into their bye week, week 13, 7-5, and never lost a game again. They played two close games back-to-back with the Rams and the Chiefs. They got absolutely annihilated by the Saints on Sunday Night Football and said, you know what, I don't want to lose anymore. And they made Patrick Mahomes look pretty dumb in the Super Bowl. That defense is absolutely outstanding. I don't see any reason why this team doesn't win the division by a lot. It's kind of funny because, like, a lot of our episodes have been going like hour and a half, close to 2 hours, it feels like some days, but these four teams didn't really make a whole lot of moves. In Tampa Bay's case, they didn't make any moves. They just brought everyone back. You know, the Saints lost their Hall of Fame quarterback. Carolina has good talent, but we don't know what we're going to see. And Atlanta's in a weird spot in terms of what do they do next, because it looks like they probably can't compete. I think Tampa Bay easily wins this division by 4 to 5 games, it feels like. I feel like it's not even going to be close. I feel like they'll be the first team to clinch the division in the NFL. Probably 14 to 15 wins. I feel like there will be, you know, some games where they either play down on the competition or, you know, just flat out get beat. I don't think they'll even come close to losing five games like they did last year. I'm not 100% sure what their schedule looks like, but they should be able to 6-0 their division after they lose to the Cowboys week one, of course. Sorry, Ken. I just had to say it. Unfortunately, I will see. But yeah, this is the most straightforward division in the NFL. It is a very huge consensus on who's going to win this division. Wouldn't be surprised if they were the number one seed in the NFC. Get a bye, win, you know, three games and win another ring for Tom Brady. And what else is there to say? It's just as straightforward as you can get about a division. You know, if us three are wrong and we get surprised, then so be it. Like, those things happen, but I don't think this is the division where we're going to get surprised.
Yeah, realistically, this podcast could have been 5 minutes. We could have just been like, okay, Ken, you have the floor. Tampa Bay, your 2021, 2022 NFC South champions. Because that's what it's going to be. Unless there is just a massive uproar and there's some, like, surprise sleepers. It's going to take some otherworldly stuff for Tampa Bay to not be the NFC South champions at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And a couple of anecdotes. Ronald Jones, he was the number one running back in the NFL last year with yards gained after being hit. The guy has continued to improve every single year he's been in the league, and that's why I look for the Bucs running game to kind of take that next step this season and really be on par with the passing offense. Second thing is Leonard Fournette was almost cut last year. In early December, he went to talk to Coach Arians, complaining about playing time and you know, kind of had his head down, was kind of moping around. And Bruce Arians just laid it out and said, dude, I will cut you if that's what you want. I will cut you right now, and you can go look for another opportunity if that's what you want. I'm willing to work with you. And Bruce wasn't mad about it. He wasn't rude about it. He just said, hey, I'll try to help you. You want to get cut? We'll cut you if you're not happy with the playing time. Well, Fournette thought about it, and everybody's glad that he made the decision to stick because he was a beast in the playoffs, 384 yards rushing, and earned the nickname Playoff Lenny. So, you know, he'll be back. By the way, that is the number one battle this year in Bucs training camp. They don't have a lot of positions where people are fighting for starting spots, but running back is one. Leonard Fournette or Ronald Jones. They haven't named a starter yet, and they probably won't till right before the first game of the season. But it doesn't matter really who starts. Arians goes with a hot hand. So if Jones is ripping off 5-6 yards of carry, he's the guy that's getting the bulk of the carries that game. Doesn't matter, you know, that Fournette started or vice versa. So a lot of good things to look forward to with that running game this year.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's going to be it for us. Like, it's just it's so straightforward. If something happens and somehow the Bucs didn't figure it out and somebody else wins this division, take this episode and throw it in our face. Because I'm willing to say that that's not going to happen. I'm just willing to say that Tampa Bay is going to win a lot of games. They're going to win their division, and they're going to probably make a deep run into the playoffs, if not another Super Bowl, because that's just what Tom Brady does. I mean, could they lose in the Super Bowl? Sure, but I definitely would not be surprised if they were representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, Ken, thank you for coming on. I know it's probably like a good opportunity to gloat too. Like, you just be like, this is my team and this is why we're going to beat you again.
Absolutely. It's great to be in Tampa Bay. I mean, the stadium will be actually sold out this year for the first time I want to say in about 15 years, first time that every single seat will be accounted for. So we're looking forward to having 65,000 at Raymond James yelling loudly for the Bucks and having a true home field advantage. So that'll be awesome. Look forward to it.
Devin, you got anything left?
No. Thank you guys for listening, and thank you to Ken for coming on. We always appreciate having guests on the show, and it was great having an expert in the field of the best team in the division, because, you know, there's always implicit bias in ranking teams. We did the NFC East. Austin's a Cowboys fan. His optimism will forever burn throughout his heart. True. Whenever we do the AFC West, I'm sure I'm going to over-evaluate some of these Chargers coming up. But no,
17-0.
This is the team in this division that is going to just stomp on people's throats, barring any catastrophic thing happening. But yeah, no, that's basically about it from me. Thanks again, Ken. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, and if you guys haven't read Ken's articles before, get on it. We'll have a link in the description of the podcast that you can go check out all his Tampa Bay articles. Like he said, he writes for the Lightning, writes about the Rays, writes about the Buccaneers. Three really good. One of them's almost a championship team, and one of them's a repeat champion, and the other one could be a repeat champion. Like Tampa Bay's rolling in titles right now. They're just having straight up a good time. I will always be impressed by Steven Stamkos 2 years ago playing in like game three of the Stanley Cup Finals with a torn groin or something like that. Like Tampa Bay is just fun.
Yes, and then he scored a goal. He was on the ice for 7 minutes total in seven Stanley Cup games and scores a goal.
Yeah.
Game winner. So.
Could not be me. Literally never.
Yeah.
So check out Ken's articles. Thank you for listening. And I got nothing else.
Peace. Hey, you're still here? Well, since I've got your attention, you head over to borderfuelsports.com/shop. You'll be able to find plenty of merchandise like
shirts,
hoodies,
mugs,
stickers,
hats,
posters,
Patrick Mahomes themed clothing,
Dak Prescott themed clothing,
tank tops when you want to show off your muscles,
especially when you don't want to show off them muscles. But whenever you're going to try and show off with any of this merchandise, be sure to use the code MAKESHIFT10.
That's MAKESHIFT10 at borderfuelsports.com/shop.